Wow, great party.
Thanks.
Hey, where's the bathroom?
Down the hall, second door on the left.
Jesus Christ!
Yes?
Oh, my God.
What's the matter?
You've got some f***ed up s*** going on in your bathroom.
Are Bill and Kelly having sex in there again? I told him to use the bedroom.
No, man. There's some glowy baby.
Oh, that's my Glow with God Baby Jesus soap on a rope from Bubble Genius. It smells like baby powder.
Dude, it was speaking to me with angels singing.
Uh-huh. You had one of those brownies in the kitchen, didn't you?
Cleanliness is next to godliness at Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
You see, if you shoot pool with some employee here, you can come and borrow money. What does that get us? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class. And all because a few starry-eyed dreamers like Peter Bailey stir them up and fill their head with a lot of impossible ideas. Now, I say...
Just a minute. Now, hold on, Mr. Potter. Just a minute. Now, you're right when you say my father was no businessman. I know that. Why he ever started this cheap penny-ante building alone, I'll never know, but... Neither you nor anybody else can say anything against his character because his whole life was... Why, in the 25 years since he and Uncle Billy started this thing, he never once thought of himself. Isn't that right, Uncle Billy? He didn't save enough money to send Harry to school, let alone me. But he did help a few people get out of your slums, Mr. Potter. And what's wrong with that? Well, here, you're all businessmen here. Don't it make them better citizens? Doesn't it make them better customers? You said that they... What did you say just a minute ago? They had to wait and save their money before they even thought of a decent home? Wait for what? Until their children grow up and leave them? Until they're so old and broken down that they... Do you know how long it takes a working man to save $5,000? Just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. People were human beings to him, but to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, he died a much richer man than you'll ever be.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
11 days left for Christmas shopping. 11 days left to fill the stocking. 11 days left for Christmas shopping. Only got 11 days more.
Hiya, Christmas is just around the corner. Only 11 more shopping days. You better hurry.
We're hoping that your holiday is an extra special jolly day.
Hello, this is Arnold Schwarzenegger. Season greetings and best wishes for a joyous holiday.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It's Thursday, December 13th, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. Yeah, I heard lots of stuff. I heard you snorting cocaine. I heard you...
No, I emphasized burping, actually.
Oh, okay.
Now, you know, now right. Suddenly I know why you love that damn It's a Wonderful Life movie so much. That clip alone just spelled... That's your entire political philosophy right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. Did you ever read the Gary Kamiya thing that he wrote for Salon about 10 years ago on how... Bedford Falls, that's the name of the place, right?
Yeah, yeah.
On how Bedford Falls sucks and Pottersville was actually a cooler town.
I read that. Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean, that's the cynical point of view. Yeah.
But
I mean,
that's, of course, my point of view. Chicks and places to drink and places to jitterbug and all that.
It's terrible.
Bedford Falls is boring.
Yeah. Pottersville is the neocon utopia. That's what Pottersville is. Yeah,
I absolutely. Didn't think they liked chicks.
Well,
they didn't like, you know, they don't like, nudity and stuff like that.
Open up the newspaper. The Republicans don't like chicks.
Would
really?
You really want to live in Bedford Falls, though?
Absolutely. I would kill to live in Bedford Falls. I
oh
love
my
that
God.
Place.
Dude, I'd go insane. Are you kidding me?
That's great. It's great. And it's to me, Bedford Falls represents the American dream. And you know what? Look, that movie was quaint and fun to watch when I was a kid, but God, when the recession hit, I saw that movie in an entirely different light. I took about, I don't know, 5 years away from it, and then watched it again in 2009-ish, around there. And holy hell, man, you want to talk about something that hits home? That was, oh, what a great movie. What a great movie. I think you need to look at it from our current perspective, the perspective of adults who have lived through and survived the Great Recession and are fighting these fights, these class war, not class warfare, but income inequality and, you know, the Occupy Wall Street kind of battle between the middle class and corporate America. I think it's fantastically prescient. You know,
I just don't like being bored, and Bedford Falls is just far too white bread for me. I would go insane, and I'd also be thrown out of there for, like, you know, setting things on fire and urinating in public and painting graffiti and that kind of thing.
I love that. You know, then you just get on the train and you go down to Manhattan.
No, see, I would have moved to Manhattan.
See, by these measures, you would love Buffalo. I think you would love living in Buffalo because Buffalo is a hellhole. Way too cold.
No, way too cold. No, Buffalo, I mean, I know that the sort of camaraderie that people who grew up in Buffalo have. I know plenty of people who are from there. And it's, from what I hear, if you're into that, it's a great place. Everybody's kind of in it together because it's obviously cold. And yeah, it is kind of a hellhole from what I hear.
Yeah.
But they've got a certain amount of civic pride. The same way there are people like I know a bunch of people from Detroit. And they've all got the same thing. There's this sort of civic pride there, you know, circled around a place that really, quite frankly, probably sort of sucks.
Well, you know, we got to talk about a lot of different things this week. And I say we got to talk about a lot of different things this week because the reaction to last week's show was...
We're not going there again, are we?
No. But I'm just talking about the reaction.
I get your point. We need to hit as many... Let's just see if we can hit 1,000 topics for like a minute each.
Yeah, that's right.
So all those people last week who complained, screw them.
We wrapped up last week's show, and we said to each other after I stopped recording, I said, wow, damn good show. Wow, that was great. That was great. We need to do that more often. In fact, we were so pumped up by our show last week where we debated for an entire hour over media bias. And we actually ended up doing like a third show in between recording the other two shows. That's how jazzed we were. And then we go to the internet and we look
and
at the internet.
Just ripping us to shreds.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was just, that's so dull. God, so dull. Why did you do that? It's like we ran over their dog and then backed over it again.
I guess no, you know what? Screw them. At least they talked about it. I mean, good publicity. You got a lot of comments on your blog. I saw that.
My defense of last week's show is this. I mean, what you get from this show is whatever is on our mind and we hash it out. That's the nature of this show. Whether that takes 2 minutes or whether it takes 55 minutes. If the hot button topic that we're really into discussing that week happens to take an entire hour. We did that with Trayvon. We did that with, God, we did that with Daniel Tosh, for God's sake.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. What do all of those things have in common? It's us disagreeing because neither of us can ever be wrong.
Yeah.
And that's why it goes back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going down this road again, and I'm not giving you crap for it, but you especially like... You like arguing so that other people can hear and that other people can hopefully and, you know, hopefully as far as you're concerned, be brought over to your opinion.
I also like arguing because I like to argue.
I know. See, actually,
that's what I do.
I told you a long time ago. I believe it or not, I don't. I mean, I like making my point, and certainly when confronted, I'll do my best to fight back or to sort of make myself clearer. And sometimes I'm successful, sometimes I'm not. But no, I don't really like arguing. And my attitude is I don't like arguing when I think that nothing's going to come of it besides two people just basically, you know, going back and forth and playing tic-tac-toe. You know, nobody's going to win. And that's sort of what my take on it is. But I do understand it. You know, honestly, it was a fun discussion, so the hell with it.
You don't like arguing. Yeah. That's hilarious.
I, you know.
That's a hilarious notion.
No, I don't like arguing when I don't think that anything's going to come of it. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay.
I don't like arguing when I know that, all right, look, you're coming from a point of view that I can appreciate your point of view, but you're very dug in on it. And I'm dug in on mine, you know, and there's not really any wiggle room for either person. And that's when it turns into, all right, you know what? This is just, this is nothing. It's just all for hot air. And that's what I mean. I mean, I've done that on Facebook so many times where I've shut people down and just said, look, you know what? You've made your points. You believe in them wholeheartedly. I've made mine. I believe in mine wholeheartedly. You know, and never the two shall meet.
Yeah.
So well, I mean, just stop.
I mean, regardless of that, I think, again, what you get with this show is the genuine reaction, the genuine
I agree with that.
Personality of both of us combined right. into what can often be a lot of agreement, but also quite a bit of disagreement, whether it's a Wonderful Life or MSNBC and media bias. So one thing we were wrong about last week, and I felt horrible when I learned this, the singing, the last on the
Bubble Genius commercial. I'm sorry, that was my fault too.
Well, no, I mean I didn't know either. But on last week's Bubble Genius commercial, there was some beautiful singing,
and I really thought it was Sarah. It sounded to me, it sounded like her.
And we mistakenly thought it was Sarah from Bubble Genius doing the performance. Turns out it was Wanda Yang Temko, Benjamin Temko's wife, and Benjamin Temko is a mutual Facebook friend of ours.
Yes.
And I guess they were Wanda was recruited by Bubble Genius to perform that song last week. And boy, she is a professional opera singer. In case you missed that, because it was really damn good. And from what Paula tells me from Bubble Genius, she said that Wanda's actually performed at Carnegie Hall. I can only imagine how great that performance must have been. And right now, I'm really, because it's the Christmas season, and I've made mention of this before, I love the Christmas music. So one of the things that I've been hitting on my iTunes is the Three Tenors Christmas album, which is, right. I just love that.
So does that mean that wasn't really Sarah urinating on this commercial?
Yeah, that's right. We went from
there. You don't know how I feel about that sort of thing. I have very, very weird sexual proclivities.
And you like the showers?
Not so much that, but I just, it's, women urinating. That's kind of a cool thing.
You like, you observe the showers.
Leaving the door open. You know, you do what you can there.
So big apologies to Wanda Yang Temko. Really, really enjoyed that last week. Hats off to you. Fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah. Terrific.
I guess the big news from today is today, Thursday, Susan Rice has withdrawn her name from consideration for Secretary of State.
Couldn't have seen that one coming.
Yeah, that was
falling on the sword.
Yeah. And, we don't know whether or not the president was actually going to nominate her, but it was going to be, you know, I think they were going to do it.
Yeah, but it's a beautiful political moment because it really takes the wind out of their sails.
The Republicans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were hoping for a confirmation process that was basically an impeachment hearing on Benghazi.
Yeah,
I mean that's been the first impeachment hearing is what the confirmation process would have been, and that's the entire thing. I mean, I can only imagine if the Democrats had put up this much of a fuss when Condoleezza Rice was nominated for Secretary of State, she was confirmed, and despite delivering lots and lots of false statements and bad intelligence to the American people as the national security advisor.
Yep.
Whether it was Iraq or, you know, the August, the August 6th PDB, Bin Laden determined to attack inside the United States. Lots of stuff they missed. And yet, Condi was successfully nominated and confirmed by the Senate.
Right, because the Democrats, despite some of their faults, are interested in fairness and actually governing.
That's right.
The Republicans are just interested in power and obstructionism that leads to their power. Simple as that.
The thing is, as we've said before, the Democrats are interested in actually doing business.
Yeah,
whether
that's
that
what
means
I mean.
Compromising or whatever on a position, they want to get stuff done. The Republicans don't care, and that doesn't appear to be changing at all. Susan Rice has a letter that she wrote to the president and was actually published by NBC News. I'm not going to read the whole thing, But it was very gracious. It was a little, it was longer than I've seen these sorts of things, but we'll maybe provide that link on the blog later. But it's a good letter, and she doesn't say anything about Benghazi in this. And of course, why would she? It's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous made-up issue.
Right. No, she can't. I mean, you can't give them credit for that.
So who's gonna take her place? Who's gonna be the nominee for Secretary of State? Well, I can tell you who shouldn't be, and that's John Kerry. I like John Kerry. John Kerry was a terrible candidate for president 8 years ago, but you know, he's a good guy. I think his head's in the right place in a lot of things. But it would be a big mistake to nominate him, because what does that do? Leaves a big vacancy in the Senate. This guy's built up, 25 years of seniority in the Senate? And right. And that, you know, I could just see it coming down Main Street. Who gets the nod from the Republicans to run for his seat? Scott Brown. So suddenly Scott Brown's back in the Senate.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So, I mean, it's not a foregone conclusion that he would get it. But, I mean, based on what happened 4 years ago, there's a solid shot that he would end up worming his way back in. Because remember, yeah, remember,
I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, the White House completely botched that that election.
So who then, by the way? Who?
There's got to be someone who doesn't have a big name or a lot of face work. By the way, what is wrong with John Kerry's face? Have you noticed him? He has a weird face to begin with, but I think he had some sort of either botched plastic surgery or something, because he's got like Popeye mouth now.
He looks like that face on the side of like Stone Mountain, and not Stone Mountain, but whatever that the old man mountain thing. I'm just talking tourist traps at this point. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Ignore me.
That old mountain man thing. Okay,
that old mountain. You know what? Just ignore me. Somebody out there is going to know what the hell I'm talking about. It's like in Tennessee or something.
I mean, he went from looking like Fred Gwynne to looking like Popeye. Mm. And I'm not sure what's going on there. But it's weird, because when he talks, his mouth almost looks like he's animatronic. It's like animatronic John Kerry. It's bizarre. But I don't know. I mean, there's got to be someone who is just really qualified to do the job, but who doesn't get snatched away from the Senate or some other post of high status.
Right. Just for future reference, it's the old man of the mountain, and it was in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. Okay. I visited it when I was a kid, but I think it's since like kind of collapsed and fallen off. But the profile looks like John Kerry. Google it, sons of bitches.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break back after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
What in the hell is that?
This is awful. And that's why I chose it. It's Queensryche.
It's Queensryche. I was going to say it's Queensryche. It's Jeff Tate's voice.
Performing White Christmas.
No, just get that off.
I know. I'm going to stop it now.
You're going to permanently destroy Mindcrime for me, and that's really a tough thing to do, because that was an amazing album.
When I heard this, I grabbed that off of YouTube. When I heard that, I just laughed and laughed and laughed.
I remember growing up, it was like, man, Jeff Tate's got an operatic voice. He's got 72 octaves, man.
And now in hindsight, you hear that and you go, what the hell is that?
You know, yeah, there was that. The thing is, like, there was the brief period in, like, I don't know, from like 80, God, I don't want to say like maybe 85 to 89, where Queensryche were just freaking amazing. They were on top of the world. They released like three amazing records in a row. And then after that, I was just kind of like, I mean, I know they're a good band, but it's just like, all right, whatever.
Let's move on. I mean, I don't know. I don't know who's going to get the nomination. It might end up being John Kerry. I just really hope it's not. I just think that'd be a huge mistake, especially when the Senate is so close to, being 50-50 or worse. You know, I think we've got a four-seat majority right now, but we need every vote we can get, considering the conservatives and Ben Nelson and those guys. But anyway, I wanted to mention this, too. Why don't we talk about the fiscal cliff more often?
Why don't we, personally?
Yes.
Because I hate that story.
Yes, me too, and I'll tell you why. Because every time something like this comes up, it is everyone makes asses of themselves trying to unravel all of the speculation and the trial balloons and all the crap news that comes out of Washington when this happens. There's nothing solid to latch on to. So, you know, every time I see a story about the fiscal cliff, Boehner said this, President said that, I just go, what do I talk about here? Do I pretend to analyze and know what exactly they're trying to get at or know what their strategy is? Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I have no blessed clue what either the Democrats or the Republicans are doing. Yes, the president didn't crap all over raising the Medicare eligibility age. By the way, thanks for that for two reasons. One, it's a terrible idea. Two, I have to not only type but say eligibility all the time. Because of this, thank you very much, Republicans and Democrats, for putting that on the table, because it's now a pain in the ass to report.
No. But can you say sequestration?
Sequestration. That's fine. I could say that. Eligibility is just a few too many I's in there.
You need specificity. That's
specificity,
my favorite.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, the president didn't crap all over it on television the other day. So obviously the left is up in arms. He's gonna do it. He's going to raise the eligibility age. See, I have to pause every time I say it.
Eligibility.
Got to make sure I get it. He's going to do it. He's going to screw over Medicare. And it is a terrible idea. I wrote a column about it for the Daily Banter this week. It's a terrible, terrible idea. And here's why. It's going to cost $2 for people for every dollar that the government saves. It's an awful idea. Hundreds of thousands of people would lose their health insurance. That's not, we're trying to do the opposite of that. We're trying to lower the Medicare eligibility age, not raise it. Phenomenally bad idea. But who knows which side is actually meaning it? I know the Republicans actually mean it. They want to kill it. But, I mean, no one knows that whether or not the president's going to do it. So why even bother saying, oh, my God, leaning on the panic button about this? Ashby wrote to me, sent me an email today. Ashby from the blog said Twitter's driving him nuts today because self-respecting liberal bloggers are just acting crazy over the president and the Medicare age. I didn't even try eligibility there. But, I mean, we just don't know. So,
right.
So, and this is happening over and over and over again on all the various issues. We don't know what he's ultimately going to do about the debt ceiling. He's certainly stonewalling the Republicans, but who knows where it's going to land? I have no idea. We spent the last year and a half speculating on who's going to win the presidency, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of a pundit-driven thing, yeah. And there's something obnoxious about the term fiscal cliff that I just get tired of seeing.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
And hearing, you know, I mean, I'm just exhausted by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's
and it's the crappy because thing is you already know which way it's going to go when it comes to just a, you know, just a from a standpoint of a debate. You know, I mean, the Republicans are not going to give. They may have to at some point, but I mean, they're in the losing. They're in a losing fight on this one. But they're going to be as stubborn as humanly possible. And that something about that just frustrates me so badly. And we are sort of coming up on the holidays, and I think I've kind of tuned that out.
Yeah. Well, I think at the end of the day, the Republicans are going to screw themselves because they're playing an old game. It's just like with the election.
Right.
But, you know, I'm tired of the speculation. I want the facts, and I want to know exactly what's going on, and there's no way to know because it's a very, you know, complicated public chess game going on right now.
It's very hard to see. I mean, one of the things that you know, I'm not going back to the MSNBC thing, but you do learn when with the prevalence of sort of political media out there that it does sometimes feel really tough to get just an honest assessment of like something, you know, like sort of a fact checking type thing. Okay, here's what it is. Here's what it means. Here's what is likely to happen based on what's happening, you know, just that kind of thing. You know what I mean? I mean, everybody has sort of a spin for it. And then, yeah, you're right. They bring in, God forbid, they bring in Mark Halperin or something to sort of, you know, give his freaking sage wisdom.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Mark Halperin a little later on the show. Talk about failing up. But we'll get to that in a bit. You know, so you're not going to hear much about it from us. I mean, certainly if there's something that comes up along the way. Well, besides, you know, what the hell? We've got one more show before we go over the cliff anyway.
Right. And everybody's, you can, it sounds crazy, but it's true. You can outsource that crap.
Yeah.
Because everybody's talking about it everywhere else. You know, when I don't feel like listening to music and I ride around and I listen to, you know, news in the car, you know, especially if I'm listening to MSNBC, it's all they talk about. The roundtable discussions, dear God, it's all they talk about.
And there's nothing solid there. It's all
right. There's nothing. It's all speculation.
Yeah. I mean, you can get outraged over who said what, but who knows? That could change any second after that.
Yep.
So it's wasted time and energy. By the way, when we come back from the break, we're going to break for Bubble Genius here in a second. We come back from the break. I've got more details on our Bob and Chez show, Bubble Genius Bob and Chez show meetup.
Oh yeah,
coming up next year. We got a few more details on that. Plus, I want to talk about Mark Halpern. I want to talk about the Oregon shooting. I want to talk about Ted Nugent, Chris Christie, Republican outreach, PolitiFact. Lots of stuff still to get to on the show. Quick break. Back after this. Yes, that's right. We are brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. If at no other time of the year, you ought to be buying your all of your Christmas shopping, doing all of your Christmas shopping at BubbleGenius.com. And it makes for a great gift for anyone in your family, from kids to your wife, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, what have you. It'll keep them happy and invariably sweet-smelling. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
Wow, great party.
Thanks.
Hey, where's the bathroom?
Down the hall, second door on the left.
Jesus Christ!
Yes?
Oh, my God.
What's the matter?
You've got some f***ed up shit going on in your bathroom.
Are Bill and Kelly having sex in there again? I told him to use the bedroom.
No, man. There's some glowy baby.
Oh, that's my Glow with God Baby Jesus Soap on a Rope from Bubble Genius. It smells like baby powder.
Dude, it was speaking to me with angels singing.
Uh-huh. You had one of those brownies in the kitchen, didn't you?
Cleanliness is next to godliness at Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com!
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Your promo code is Bob and Chez, BobandChez, 15% off all of your Christmas shopping at BubbleGenius.com. The Bubble Genius Bob and Show meetup. Bob and Chez Show meetup. We're going to do this. It's going to be in the great state of Tennessee. It's going
to
be
hard to believe.
We're going out there. We're both flying out there to speak on a panel about social media and politics at ETSU, Eastern Tennessee State University. And that's going to be on the 20th.
You will be there. I will be killed at the airport.
Why? Because you're not allowed into the red state?
Because I'm me. Yes.
That's going to be on the night of the 27th of February. February 27th, 2013 at ETSU. I'll have details in terms of where specifically it'll be held, but it's open to the public so everyone can come by and watch us. Plus, I think the blogger from Feministing is also going to be on the panel.
Yeah. What's her name? Vanessa Valenti.
Forget it. Yeah, there you go.
Did I get that right? Yeah.
And plus, the day before. Now, this is the important event. On the 26th of February, we're going to be meeting up at a bar somewhere near the Carnegie Hotel. I don't think there's a bar in the Carnegie Hotel.
Yes,
but
you can find. You can look for Bob sitting on his bar stool and me passed out on the floor.
So we're going to have more details in terms of what time and where, but it's going to be at a bar somewhere near the Carnegie Hotel in Johnson City, Tennessee. And so we don't know. I mean, there's no bar. I don't think there's a bar in the Carnegie
Hotel. It's Johnson
Hotel,
City, but. Tennessee. What, like Applebee's? I mean, not to knock Frederick and ETSU or any of that, but no, you know.
Well, it's a college town, so there's bound to be some bars.
Oh man. You want me drinking with college kids? Oh, boy. That's going to be ugly.
That's going to be fun to observe. So so come one, come all. If you happen to be in the Tennessee vicinity, the eastern Tennessee vicinity, anywhere near Johnson City, Knoxville is only about an hour away. We're going to be at a bar somewhere near the Carnegie Hotel on February 26th. And then on February 27th, we're both going to be sitting on a panel discussing social media and politics at ETSU.
We're going to be sitting on a panel completely hungover.
At ETSU. So
right,
come.
Exactly.
Watch us drink and then come back the next night to see us hungover.
You and I are going to be at some college bar, and we're going to be like Harold and Kumar in a very Harold and Kumar Christmas, teaching kids about the right way to play beer pong.
Yeah, right.
How we
right.
did it in our day.
So I wouldn't say this is an actual event. The meetup at a bar. I don't think we should term it as an actual event. If you happen to be there, we'd love to meet you.
Absolutely.
So that's how we got to term. Otherwise, we've got to talk to the bar and get permission, and then.
True.
Probably pay them something, which
the more the merrier, though.
We're
they
not going to do. If you happen to be in the neighborhood and you want to meet us, then that's where we're going to be. In Tennessee.
In Johnson City, Tennessee.
Where hopefully the night will not end like Roadhouse or something, where we're running away from rednecks, hurling bottles at our heads. Can't wait. So
it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, definitely interesting. So. Mark Halperin, John Heilman continue to fail up. They're wrong about everything, and they just signed a $5.3 million deal to write a sequel to Game Change.
Oh. And Jeff Zucker is head of CNN. The world is an unfair place.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, as entrepreneurs, now I got to qualify my failing up thing. As entrepreneurs, they're doing quite well for themselves. So they released a book. It did very well in bookstores and then became this HBO movie that won all kinds of Emmys. It's nominated for a Golden Globe Award. We're going to be talking about the Golden Globes on the after party this week. But it was nominated for best TV movie or miniseries, the Golden Globes, for God's sake. So not only did we get to see Mark Halperin's doughy face on stage at the Emmys this year, but now we get to see his doughy face on the stage at the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
Standing there with the cast and everything. Can't wait.
Yeah, it is depressing.
It really is. It really is.
Because under no circumstances should Mark Halperin be welcomed into any sort of a Hollywood party.
That's right.
It's just not right.
Well, he'll tell you what to expect.
At the
party. He'll say, yeah, expect drinking. Watch for that. Watch for drinking.
Yeah, you know what, Mark? Why don't you tell us who's going to win the Golden Globes? You're wrong about everything else.
That's right. I'd love to hear that. Here's Mark Halperin's preview of the Golden Globes. Hey, there's going to be awards given out. Watch for that. And there's going to be guest celebrity presenters. Watch for that. There's going to be a statuette or two given out. Watch for that.
He's such a douche.
And that's just it. There's just nothing there. There is nothing there.
His predictions, when they're not wrong, are like John Edward, the psychic guy's yeah. predictions. They're all really roundabout and done so that you can read into it whatever you want.
Yeah, your mom. I'm getting an M word. It's mom. Your mom.
Yeah.
Your mom
exactly.
is
yeah, that's it.
Older than you. Ooh, did I just blow your mind? It's terrible. Terrible that this guy not only is regarded as a very serious purveyor of conventional wisdom in Washington, but it's also terrible that this guy gets to write the first draft of history about consequential elections. 2008 being especially consequential and historic. And the version of that election that everyone now is going to recognize, at least people who have read the book or saw the movie, is the Mark Halperin version of the election.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Unbelievable. I mean, it was bad in terms of some of the things they had in that book. First of all, there was no index. There were no sources for any of their dirt. It was just really, really horrible. And there's something inherently dangerous in someone like Mark Halperin getting his hands, his grubby hands on history. Bad, bad stuff. Hey, we got to take one last break. Back after this.
Oh, no.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You better watch out.
Dawkins.
Yeah. You know what I want for Christmas? I want Don Dawkins to die in a fire.
Now he's getting up in that upper register. Now, you know what that is? That is not, they didn't, this is how lame Dawkins is. They not only didn't create new music for Santa Claus is Coming to Town, obviously, because it is a standard Christmas song. They borrowed their own song for it. They actually recycled the song Dream Warriors. This is the actual, this is the song from Nightmare on Elm Street.
But every Dawkins song is just a recycling of another one. That's all hair metal was.
That's true. But this is almost verbatim, the same guitar lick and the same tempo. Once it actually kicks in, here it goes. You getting this now?
Right, yeah, yeah.
This is Dream Warriors by Dawkins, right? And now I'm going to play the other song, the Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Yeah, they just, yeah, all right, whatever.
It's the same song. I thought that was hilarious because we were talking about Dawkins last week. And nothing says Merry Christmas like 80s heavy metal. So anyway, so Mark Halperin continues to fail up, and it's bad. So we both wrote about gun violence this week.
Yeah.
So I thought we'd get into that. There was the terrible shooting at the mall in Portland, Oregon. I say it's the mall because I don't know if there's more than, I guess there's only, there's probably more than,
there's only one. I think it's actually just outside Portland. I've never been to Portland, believe it or not.
Portland evidently is a wonderful place to live.
That's what I've heard. It's one of those like hippie enclaves like Burlington or Austin.
And then prior to that, the Kansas City Chiefs, Jovan Belcher, shot his girlfriend and then shot himself, I guess, in the presence of his coaches, didn't he?
Yes, yes.
And then everyone was eulogizing him as if he was some kind of victim. It's terrible.
Yeah. It's amazing how it's amazing how people look at you differently when you're famous, especially a sport. You know, somebody who's involved in sports, because there's always the sort of hagiography that goes on from sportscasters to the people that they cover.
That's right. But
you know, their meme, their way of doing things is so it involves such constant praise that it's almost impossible to break out of that mold, even when one of the guys they're talking about kills somebody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's in fact strange because the same and coincidental because the same attitude you see it a lot with guns. It's basically a fetish to so many people.
It is.
The GD founding fathers with the second GD amendment.
If only they could have known.
I mean, that's
but they're infallible.
So Bob Costas said a few remarks on television about gun violence and was subsequently pilloried for it, including by the likes of Ted Nugent, who said, you know, and this is, I'm bringing this up not because of Ted Nugent, who's a bag of dicks. I don't mind saying that.
He is.
But because I've seen this point of view a lot, all over, you know, my conservative Facebook friends are saying this sort of thing. What Ted Nugent said on Twitter was, blaming guns for crime is like blaming helmets for headbutts.
With helmet misspelled.
With helmet misspelled. That's right. It was spelled with a U instead of an E. And he also said, hey, Bob Costas, we all know that obesity is a direct result of the proliferation of forks and spoons.
You just know that he really thought he was being clever there.
I know.
That's the beautiful part about it. he's considered a brilliant mind in the modern conservative movement.
It's so ridiculous. Now, see, I always fall into this trap because I see stuff like that and I try to parse it, but it's nonsense. So I always wonder, I just got to stop myself for a second and say, now, what you're about to do, Bob, and I talk to myself like this. I go, what you're about to do, Bob, is you're about to parse nonsense. And then I go ahead and do it anyway. But the thing that they're missing, and there are a lot of people who sincerely believe this kind of stuff, where they go, well, what about cars? What about forks? What about food? I got you. Try to talk about that, huh?
Mm-hmm. Right? Thanks, Cletus.
And they think they're so smart and clever for coming up with that.
Analogy. Because it's the way, I know where you're going to go with this, and it's because of the way they look at guns is different than the way a lot of people, the people who fetishize weapons especially, are they look at guns in a way that's different from the way a lot of other people do. Mm-hmm. I happen to think that the way the aforementioned lot of other people do in this country is probably the right way, which is that they see guns as a tool tool like any other, and one that can be used for good, and often is. Often, there's the argument to be made that sure, cops can use it for good, soldiers can use it for good, essentially, but it's still made to kill people. That's the idea. That's what it exists for. It exists to kill, whether it's a person or an animal.
And what makes it even more dangerous is the fact that it's so easy to kill or injure someone with a gun. Like I was, I do this all the time, but I'm going to do it again here. During the Civil War, you had soldiers who had both a rifle and a bayonet that they could attach to the rifle. Very seldom in the Civil War, despite what you might see in movies and documentaries and things like that, very seldom would they actually use the bayonet to kill someone because it was disgusting. It was hard to do because there was a sensation about stabbing someone with a bayonet that was unmistakably, it would just stick with them. So they just wouldn't do it. If they could use their rifle to shoot someone, it was a much more efficient and easier on the psyche way to take someone out. And likewise, it is with guns now. You say, Joe, if Jovan Belcher didn't have a gun, he would maybe just stabbed her. Well, I don't know. It's a lot more difficult to kill someone with a knife than it is to, and certainly to kill yourself with a knife.
Right. And the other thing is that one of the things that I've written about is that we've created this gun culture where guns are cool and exciting. That's what they represent. Mm-hmm. I think I noticed one time back when, Blockbuster was still around, I walked through Blockbuster one day and I'm like, look at the number of covers for videos that feature people with guns. And by the way, and I say this as somebody who owns a gun, and I've always drawn the distinction between people who own guns and people who fetishize them, for people for whom they are a natural extension of, it's largely guys, their manhood,
Mm-hmm.
But,
that's right.
But we've created this gun culture where guns are exciting and cool. So, Yeah, I'm sorry, but a 22-year-old kid especially, is not going to wander into a mall and begin stabbing people. And you know what? If he could, chances are it would have happened already quite a bit.
That's right.
But there's something, I'm not going to blame the video games. I'm just going to blame pop. I'm going to say that pop culture in general, as well as our attitudes in this country about guns, has created this thing where guns are exciting. So there's something you could detach from because it was, I would imagine, it's viscerally thrilling about the notion of walking into a crowded place and just shooting a bunch of people.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's something that's viscerally thrilling, and it's the sound of it. It's the weight, the heft of the firearm in your hand.
I'll tell you something. I had the funny thing is that personally for me, I had the exact opposite. I have the exact opposite opinion and the exact opposite reaction. I actually think, look, I play a lot of first-person shooter games. They're a freaking blast. I love them. Yeah. I, on the other hand, have fired a gun, pointed at a target and fired. Thankfully, not a person and not an animal, but, and for me, It was exactly the opposite, because when you feel the gun in your head and you hear that report, that you know, the massive sound that thing makes, especially when you're at a range and you're indoors, and you know, you smell the chloride, you smell the, you know, you've got, it's just, it all happens for you. That's when, and, you know, and you're, and certainly with the 45, when your wrist hurts from firing that thing, because that's how powerful it can be. That drove home the point to me that, like, wow, I'm not dealing with something childish here. Yeah. You know, imagine what I could do if someone were standing in front of me. There was nothing at all thrilling about it. There was an immense respect. And that's the thing that I often write about. You know, the fact that my dad, as an ex-cop and, you know, an ex-SEAL, taught me just this immense respect for guns. Immense respect. And his attitude was always, you know what, people who don't have a respect for their guns and who think of them as, you know, who idolize them and you know, you can have it when you pry for my cold, dead hands. And this is, you know, this is the most important thing in my life. And who sort of conflate their identity with guns. Those are the last people on earth you want to be armed, because they're not the responsible ones.
Yeah. I mean, there's got to be almost a fearful respect for them, I imagine.
That's it. And I think that's what you should have. I really do. Yeah. I mean, it's not saying that, you know, if I were ever put in a situation where I had to do something and I happened to have, you know, a weapon on me, I wouldn't. I could, you know, or at least I believe I could. But yeah, I mean, there's no denying. Ask almost any cop in the world, you know, screw cop shows. Ask any cop who's had to fire his weapon and hurt or kill somebody. You know, there's a reason they go into, they're immediately put in, you know, sent to see a shrink after it.
That's right.
You know, because it has an effect on you. It's not just a game.
But there's something, I think there's something cultural in America with guns that actually feeds that fetishism when it comes to that visceral desire to, among certain people, to possess these things. And Michael Moore, for all of his faults, did a great job in Bowling for Columbine laying out American.
I know. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about the American psyche, the national psyche, that comes from a long history, beginning with
it's this pioneering thing. This, you know, you're going to have to defend your land, crap, from all comers. And, you know, now there are a lot of people who have taken that and turned it into this paranoia, this fear of the government. But one of the things that I wrote about this a while back, one of the things that I've always noticed when it comes to people who truly have a bunch of guns, this is the thing nobody ever wants to admit to. But, you know, it's like you read some of these websites and you see the response from some of these people. And the fact is, you know, if other people had been, this is the dead giveaway. You know, if more people had been armed, somebody could have taken that guy down. What that gives you right there is a window into their psyche, because these assholes walk around armed, praying for the moment that they get to kill somebody. They really do. They'll deny it, but it's absolutely true. They long for the thought of, you know, for the thought of being there when something happens that they get to pull their gun and use it.
And with a guy like,
you know, whether it's a heroic thing or just a, you know. You know, I think I said, I'm like, you know, the fantasies that these guys always have typically involve brown people. But regardless, you know, the George Zimmerman thing, you know, I've got a gun on me and here's my chance to, even if it's something in the back of your mind, even if it's subconscious, you know, here's my chance to be a hero. And damn it, I'm going to do it. I'm trained. I can do this.
And it's also
I can be badass.
I think for guys like Ted Nugent, it's also a way to dominate basically everything around them.
Yes, it is.
Where it's not only a way to intimidate people who you come into contact with, because, you end up knocking on Ted Nugent's door to deliver a package. You're the FedEx guy. Oh, holy hell. I got to deliver a package. He's crazy. He's got 90 guns and crossbows and all that crap. And then, you know, but then he loves to go shooting exotic animals. And this is another thing I don't understand. I don't understand the quote unquote sport of going and finding a coyote or a wolf, like Sarah Palin shooting wolves out of the back of a helicopter.
It's a domination kind of thing. This is a bad cliche to use, but dude, it's totally true. It's like an extension of their dick.
Yeah, it really is. And that's precisely, I mean, Ted Nugent, you go to Ted Nugent's Twitter page, and it's not, you know, Ted Nugent passing along recipes for preparing venison. It's Ted Nugent with like photographs of like hoisting dead wolves over his head. And I saw one where he was, I want to say it was like an elephant or something. Like he shot some sort of rare African beast, you know, in the wild and is standing over it with his big bag of dicks grin with his soul patch and, you know, all this stuff that I'm going to have to bleep after we're done with the show. But you know what I mean? It's like, right. Look how awesome I am because I killed this thing. It's not look how awesome I am. I'm responsibly capturing and sustaining, some sort of form of natural food.
Yeah.
It's not about that. It's about I'm badass Ted Nugent.
Right. He's badass Ted Nugent who's been taken on a safari.
That's right.
You know, where he is under no real danger from anything.
And I just
the animals he shoots, I mean, again, I'm not really coming down and hunting, I swear, but the animals he shoots, you know, they're not armed with AKs. They don't fire back.
No. And look, ultimately, I could never actually do it myself, but if you want to go out and you want to shoot a deer and prepare it and butcher it and make it into venison and stash it all in your Sub-Zero or whatever, fine. That's fine. You're feeding your family, for God's sake, and it's a sustainable way. There's deer are not in any danger of extinction. Yeah. But I mean, for God's sake, you go out and you're shooting wolves from the back of a helicopter for sport. Right.
Screw you. And that's the thing. And that's the thing where what it's all about is it's just about the gun. And I can't stress this enough, you know, I mean, ever since I was a kid, my dad taught me, you accept, even if you shoot for enjoyment or you shoot to because you hunt, you accept that the gun is something to be very, very seriously respected. And your use of it is something not to be taken really lightly. Even if you're shooting for enjoyment. You know, it's something you're always careful with. It's something, the power of which you always respect.
And then there's also a matter of math. I retweeted something David Frum wrote this week, and he passed along a statistic about guns in which it says that if there's a gun in a household, it's more likely to be stolen and used.
And used against the person who owns it, yes.
Yeah. Than it is, also to commit suicide, than it actually is able to be used by the person who owns it to defend the household.
Right. The suicide thing is, I don't know whether that makes things easier or not. I can't think of a worse way to end my life. I mean, maybe. I'm kidding.
Yeah, well, obviously the easiest way to do it is the car in the garage. Because then you just fall.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, I'm not basically what I mean is it's not I think it's not exactly the least messy way to do it.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the reasons why it's another one of those things my dad told me forever ago is he's like that's one of those reasons why you don't just buy a gun, you learn how to use it and you better know how to use it. And not only that, I mean, he was always very serious about like, look, if you own one, you better be willing to use it and to use it correctly. You know, if your idea is home, if your idea truly is home defense, if you're really concerned about that, then you better sort of have the mindset that says that I don't ever want to use this thing, but if I had to, I absolutely would.
Well, and look, I mean, at the end of the day, we're not trying to take anyone's guns away.
I'm not.
I mean, the last thing in the world. I mean, no one would ever say, okay, we're going to ban all firearms and that's that. Game over. It's not the case. It's just a matter of regulating them like we regulate everything else. I mean... How long is the list of regulations about cars? How long is the list of regulation about food, Ted Nugent? And you say, well, cars are more deadly. Food can cause obesity, and that kills people, too. Yeah, well, that's why we're regulating those things.
Yep.
And they're not. That's not their intrinsic value. The intrinsic value of food is to nourish people to survive. The intrinsic value of a fork is to deliver food for that survival. The intrinsic value of a car is for transportation. A lot of cases, necessary transportation. It's not to kill people. The whole intrinsic value of a gun is, as we said at the beginning, is to kill or wound other living creatures. Just an animal or another person or yourself.
And you don't necessarily these days need to use it to procure food anymore.
That's right. But we're willing to
concede. If you want to, it's your business, but still.
I mean, but again, it always seems like on the liberal side of things, we're the ones confronted with the having to concede these points. The NRIA says, no, everything. We want full gun rights. No matter what, anyone who wants a gun can go get a gun. Walk into a gun show and get a gun. Anyone who wants one should be able to have one. But we're the ones saying, you can buy a gun, but you got to pass a background check. You can't be psychotic or abusive or, you know.
Yeah, I think you should have to jump through a hell of a lot of hurdles to get your hands on a firearm.
Well, obviously, we have a lot more to talk about on the After Party. If you want to subscribe to the After Party, it's $6 a month. Cancel at any time. Go to bobcesca.com. Sign up there. We're going to talk about a lot more politics this week. Everything we didn't get to on the show today, we're going to talk about tomorrow on the After Party. And we'll see you then. Take care. Bye.
Bye.